Hey there, Caleb Wojcik here, and welcome to episode 97 of my podcast. Today I'm talking with Curtis Judd of Learn Light and Sound all about audio. We get deep into, you know, a lot of tips and tricks for recording audio, when to choose different kind of microphones like a shotgun microphone, a lavalier microphone, more of a broadcast podcasting style microphone like I'm talking on right now. Then we get into some of his recommended gear and audio equipment depending on what budget you're at. So if you're entry level, you're just getting started, you want some better audio for the videos you're recording, what would he recommend you pick up? And then as you progress, going into the higher end productions, the more expensive microphones, audio recorders, things like that, once you start to make videos professionally for a living, what microphones he recommends in that category. And then we'll kind of wrap up with some common mistakes people make when they're recording audio, things you can do that don't really cost a bunch of money, but you just need to start to learn technique or worry about what's in your room that's going to help improve the quality of your audio. So without further ado, let's get into the conversation with Curtis right now. So Curtis, thanks for joining me today to talk about audio and all things recording, microphones, all that kind of stuff.
You bet. The pleasure is mine, Caleb. Thanks so much.
So let's talk a little bit about your background and how you got into doing video, what kinds of videos you do, and then we'll get into the more of the advice and the expertise part that you bring to the table to this conversation especially. So how did you get started making videos and learning about lighting and audio?
Great question. It kind of evolved from a couple different directions. So I've done some photography for a number of years, and so that's where kind of the visual part of things started to form for me, and that something I really got interested in when I was pretty young, like I was 18 or so. So I was just starting college and got really excited about photography. That was back in the film days. So I did have the privilege of learning how to shoot on film, which was kind of fun. Mm-hmm. This is just still photography at this point. But so that's where the visual background started. And then as far as audio was concerned, my brother is a musician, and he was kind of making music started in the late 90s. And so there was a huge move over to digital audio at that point. And so he bought his first Pro Tools rig, probably in 2005 or six. And he'd done, you know, he'd recorded at studios prior to that. And so, he bought his new Pro Tools rig and brought it over to my house, and we kind of nerded out. And that was kind of the beginning of audio for me. That's where I learned a lot of my, skills as far as audio is concerned. So that kind of emerged together when DSLR started including video. So with the 5D Mark II, I think it was the Nikon D90 that was the first one technically mm-hmm. to do video. But that's when they kind of came together for me, and I started producing videos. And I just started posting a few YouTube reviews here and there. And then, and that was just kind of for fun. I had no aspirations whatsoever. And then over time, we started getting some traction. I'm like, wow, this is kind of fun, and it seems to be helping some people. So we kind of took off from there. Now, as far as professional work, that kind of, once the YouTube channel got started, I had a day job where I'm actually a product manager at a software company. And I did a lot of the photography work for our conferences and things of that nature. And then once I started learning video, I kind of became the video guy too. So now I'm actually part-time videographer for the company, and then the rest of the time I still do my product management work.
Okay. So you don't do YouTube full time, which is what I think a lot of people assume of anyone that has over X number of subscribers. Like, oh, they must be full time. They must make all their money from the YouTube channel. But you're doing this, you know, on the side as like an added thing onto the work that you already do.
Yeah. Nights and weekends, and a lot less TV watching and a lot more making YouTube videos in the free time.
Yeah. But I mean, I remember, I probably started learning about video stuff back in 2011, 2012. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you were on the platform. It was like you, Caleb Pike, maybe like Dave Dugdale. Yep. There were way less people back then, you know, talking about cameras and audio and lighting. So that, you know, there were only a few people consistently making videos like you were. And so after, you know, this many years, however many pieces of audio gear you've tested, lights you've tested, cameras, setups you've used, your live streaming as well, your setup right that you have going on right now. So, you know, like what chose you, or what made you choose to like more recently focus on just audio and lighting, it seems like, with your channel?
I think there's a pretty clear need. There are a ton of camera reviewers out there, and I could have gone that direction. It just didn't appeal to me quite as much. I mean, I obviously use cameras. I think they're critical to the process of making, audiovisual content. But there was a big hole. I didn't see a lot of coverage on the sound side. And there was certainly a big need there. A lot of people that when they first get their first, kind of serious interchangeable lens camera that can shoot video, they realize pretty quickly, oh, my audio's crap. Everything else, I love my camera. It produces beautiful imagery, but... And I'm learning how to use it, but man, the audio is horrible. And so some people will, go out and buy a Rode VideoMic Pro and slap that on top of their camera. And that helps a little bit, but they're still kind of disappointed or, for whatever reason, maybe don't dive into it more. And others like really dive in and try to solve the problem. And that's where I'm hopefully can help people is help them kind of take it beyond that level and really kind of up the quality beyond just putting a camera top shotgun microphone on there.
Yeah, and I can totally understand, there's so many cameras that come out, between all the different companies, and those are the videos that tend to get a lot of views, I feel like, because, usually those are more expensive purchases. They're bigger decisions for people, so they're probably going to watch 5-10 reviews on the latest camera that comes out, and so there's more people kind of vying for the views. There's more like controversy between like this brand versus this brand. And so I understand that that's a bit of the game that you have to play on YouTube. If you are in this photo video niche of like every year, Canon, Sony, Fuji, Panasonic, like they're all going to come out with new cameras. And if you want to get the views, which helps your channel grow and to get more affiliate income and, all the things, like you're going to want to cover those cameras. And I do camera reviews occasionally too, but I don't do them about brands that I don't really know anything about. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of sticks me to Canon. And then I don't really want to do ones about the entry-level cameras either, mm-hmm. because I'm not really using a G7X or another smaller point and shoot. So that just leaves me like when I buy a cinema camera or I buy a new DSLR, every few years, I'll make a really long review about it. But, I go back and forth about whether I should be trying to stay up or like put out reviews as quick as other people. But unless you're getting that camera from the manufacturer early, it's hard to do that. And audio companies, lighting companies, they might be a little bit more willing to work with somebody, but to break into working with Canon corporate or Sony corporate, it's a little harder.
Agreed. Yeah. And it's a specialty thing too. I mean, if that's your passion, I think it's awesome and people should definitely pursue that. And in fact, that's how I found your channel originally was I watched a Canon C100 review and I think you had reviewed it. You didn't review it right after it came out. It was actually...
No, I had it for like a year.
Yeah. And that was to me, that's kind of where I feel like as filmmakers kind of mature... Where they end up landing a lot of times is, hey, it's really largely about the skills. You can make really good films with pretty much any camera if you can learn that camera system well and learn how to bring the most out of it and kind of play to its strengths. And so I think, for me, that's where I've kind of landed on cameras. I actually downgraded. I was using an Ursa Mini Pro and it was just too much camera for what I was doing most of the time. Even for my corporate work, it was a little too much camera. And it was big, it was heavy, it was really kind of focused on a cinema style workflow. And we all have aspirations to make some really cool narrative film. But it really wasn't kind of fulfilling its purpose very well for me. It kind of made some things harder than they needed to be. And this is not a diss on the Blackmagic Ursa Mini Pro or any other camera. It's just, it wasn't really fitting what I was trying to do with it. And so I actually ended up going with a C200, which I think really kind of works a lot better for me. It has an autofocus system that's really fantastic and kind of suits my needs a lot better for, shooting solo. Whereas the Ursa Mini Pro, it was great for seated interviews, but as soon as somebody got up and started moving around, it was a nightmare.
Yeah. No, I was in a similar boat because I went down the red track and purchased one, accessorized it as much as I possibly could to try to get over all the gripes I had with it of like batteries don't last very long, so get a bunch of batteries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, there's no onboard audio, so like, what can I do with that, you know, to have to... So it just, for my kinds of productions that I was doing, where a lot of the times I was the only person, you know, one man banding, you know, doing lighting, doing audio, doing video, doing everything, like, after using a Canon C100 Mark II cinema style body where I could just plug the audio in, had some good autofocus, mm-hmm. you know, I decided to sell my Red and I got a C200 used. And no, it doesn't do everything. I wish it had 10-bit, you know, and some of the other stuff. I wish it was maybe full frame, but, you know, it checks 95% of the boxes for me, and it's easy to use. And when you're using something day in and day out, you just want something that's reliable. And so that's why I haven't really wanted to upgrade beyond this. I know I would get more from the C300 Mark III or the C500 Mark II, but they're also bigger cameras different memory cards. And like, it all adds up, and learning a new system would slow me down. And so I'm the same way, where it's like, I might get excited and be interested about the latest camera, and I'll watch some reviews from people, or maybe I'll try to get a loaner or rent it to test it out. But I'm not going to upgrade my cameras frequently as the release cycle. So that's usually where I'm at.
Yeah, I agree. 100%.
So to switch gears to audio specifically, you've used so much gear over the past 10 years. What has changed over the past 10 years, and what makes things better? Because I feel like a lot of people will say, similar to lighting, with audio gear, you can buy audio gear and use it for 10 years, 20 years, your whole career. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a Rode NTG3 microphone, which is my most expensive microphone purchase I bought like 6 years ago. I use that thing every time I film a video. Well worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it'll be serving you still maybe 10 years from now. And that's the interesting thing about audio, is that you, if you're talking about something that's a transducer, I'm going to kind of throw that term out there. And a transducer is something that converts sound waves in the air into an electrical signal, like a microphone, or it's a speaker. It does the opposite, or the inverse. Mm-hmm. It actually takes an electrical signal and converts it into audio sound waves in your room. That technology doesn't change a whole lot. Now there's computational, you know, sound processing and things of that nature. Those things maybe, you know, we're seeing a lot more of that kind of stuff more recently, and we can talk about that in a few minutes. But the kind of the basic physics of capturing sound hasn't changed a whole lot. And that's another thing that's kind of interesting about the sound world, is that there are really kind of basic tools that you can use that can tremendously change the quality of your audio. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. Like, we're used to these consumer electronics devices where, you know, smartphones, a lot of the kind of new features we see over time is really software-based. I mean, there's hardware too, but and that continues to improve in terms of its processing power. But, you know, for example, on the newer MacBook Pros, I think that came out about a year ago or something like that. I don't even keep track of that stuff anymore, but they put this new microphone in it, which is doing some processing in real time to reduce background noise and to improve the quality of the sound. We're starting to see some of that type of stuff, but that still doesn't change the fact that you have to have a quality transducer to capture sound waves and convert them into electrical energy. And so that's where there's really good news on the sound front, is that once you've invested in a pretty good microphone, you know, and Rode NTG3, for example, that you cited earlier, that's what, a $700 microphone, I think? Yeah. That's an investment that can last you your entire career easily. Well, or at least 10 years.
Yeah. And I mean, so, it was $700 when I bought it, and it's still $700
versus
a 5D Mark III camera I bought in 2011. You could get used for, I don't know, $500 or $600 now. So
exactly, yeah.
It doesn't go down in price like a camera does. I feel like if it's based on speed of technology changing, I would say cameras are the fastest right now. Lighting mm-hmm. would be second, and audio would be third.
Agreed.
Because lighting is getting brighter, higher quality, smaller, cheaper. Cameras are getting higher resolution, higher bit rates. You know, bigger sensors, so the cleaner the images are, and low light, and all those types of things. And audio is, I feel like it's progressing into like kind of idiot proofing you. Like I use the Sound Devices MixPre 6 for mm-hmm. mine mm-hmm. For recording audio. And the thing I love about that is I always set my gain. I always set it as best I can. But the fact that it has the analog limiters on it, when something does peak, that it won't distort it. Like that's a worthwhile feature, and why I would pay hundreds of dollars for a new audio device over like a more entry level Zoom or Tascam that's like a couple hundred dollars.
Exactly. Yeah. And in fact, I think you bring up an interesting point, because that's where we've seen, if you want to call it innovation in the audio space, that's where we've probably seen more. And what we've seen probably, especially over the last 5 years, is we've seen the price of something that can produce very professional quality audio, very good quality audio, come down dramatically. And the MixPre is a perfect example of that. So all that technology that you saw in the MixPre, at least the first generation of the MixPre, was available in much more expensive professional quality field mixers and recorders for, you know, a number of years. And so now it's available at, you know, in the kind of sub $1,000 range at this point for a MixPre 6 or a MixPre 3. And so that was one innovation that I think we saw a lot of in the last 5 years. But now, even within the last 2 years, year and a half, 2 years, I think what we're starting to see now is actually some substantial innovation. So for example, the second generation of MixPre recorders and the Zoom F6, for example, have this new wide dynamic range recording capability. And what that does for us is that if you say, for example, you have a boom microphone hooked up to it, it's basically impossible to generate clipped audio on those. And by clipped audio, I mean it gets too loud for the recorder, and it kind of clips and makes this distorting sound. Mm-hmm. And normally on a standard recorder, you can't recover that. It's just gone. It's lost. And, you know, there's some things you can do in post to make it sound a little bit better, but it's kind of trying to recreate the waveform, and it's doing its best to guess. So the nice thing about these new generation of recorders is that you basically can't run into that issue if you're recording in that 32-bit float mode. So that's where we're starting to see a little bit more innovation there. Now, I think what's interesting too is that while we are starting to see some innovation there, there's some kind of patent wars going on as well, at least in the pro audio space. And we'll see how that eventually kind of plays out, at least here in the United States, because there are a lot of things that were patented by a particular company who shall remain nameless for now, that's kind of prevented some things from, some features from being included in products from a variety of other companies as well. So for example, the ability to wirelessly control a wireless microphone transmitter from the receiver is something that we haven't seen in a lot of the professional grade wireless systems. And we're just now starting to see other companies, the consumer grade companies, are coming up and starting to challenge that a little bit. And they're basically taking issue with the patent and saying, by releasing new products, hey, we're doing it a different way, so we're not infringing on your patent. And so mm-hmm. we're just going to go ahead and do this. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because there have been some companies that kind of I don't know if you remember the company Juiced Link. Do you remember them?
I remember them.
Yeah, they kind of made those little camera top audio adapters.
Yeah, like went underneath your camera and it would take an XLR, but then it would boost it enough to get over the hiss that used to happen in like preamps and cameras. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So they were actually sued by this company that holds a patent on one of the things that they released. And so they disappeared. They were a very small company, and it was kind of a heartbreaking story. But now we've started to see some of the other companies challenge those patents. And so I think we're going to start to see a little bit more innovation there, because there are some challenges. So for example, if you're solo operating, you're the camera operator, you're the gaffer, you're the sound guy, you're the director, you know what that's like. You're doing all these different jobs at the same time. It is hard. And so one of the things that would be really helpful from a sound perspective is having that ability to capture sound without having to worry about clipping. So if you happen to set your gain a little bit off, you're not going to get that clipping. That would be really helpful. So now we have that. And then on the wireless side, if you've got to, you're finding, this person is talking a little bit louder than they did during the sound check, we might need to pull the gain down, but you can't access their transmitter in the middle of a take. So what do you do? Having that ability to wirelessly control that from your mixer would be really, really helpful. And so hopefully we'll start to see something like that in the near future.
Yeah. So I think that even knowing that it's not progressing in a way you know, microphone wise, maybe if you're going to separate between, like, I feel like recorders are advancing way more.
Yeah.
And you might update that a little bit more frequently or upgrade to a higher level one. But buying a higher end microphone earlier, I think, is usually a good bet instead of having to, you know, upgrade your microphone every once in a while. And I mean, I have like only a couple microphones I use. Depending on what I'm doing, I use the NTG3 all the time for any talking head video I do for YouTube, any client video I do that's a single person. Then I use the Sennheiser AVX system for wireless lavaliers. I did use the Rode Link for a while, but I just felt like it just wasn't as reliable. Some of the cables and stuff would kind of bend. And then for this kind of thing, a podcast, a voiceover, I'm using a Shure SM7B. And, you know, I've used lower end microphones in those different categories before, but you know, once I upgraded to the top of the line for the prosumer or, you know, entry level professional, like I don't want anything else. Anything else is going to add like 1% or, you know, 5% of quality to me. I don't even know what would be above. I don't need like a $2,000 podcasting microphone.
Exactly. Yeah. No, you're right on. And I think that's the wonderful thing about audio and the audio world is that we can endlessly, you know, I can sit over here and endlessly review microphones and we'll happily do that, by the way. But as far as, you know, people that are out there working to create content, if you invest wisely, you're not going to have to invest a lot more. I would say that microphones are kind of like the lenses of the camera world, you know, or in
sure,
the audio.
Yeah.
If you want to draw an analogy, and I think actually they're probably even better than lenses, to be honest, because, you know, cameras are changing so quickly now. I've almost felt like, you know, now that's kind of dragging us along in terms of, oh gosh, now my lenses, I can use an adapter, yeah, but
I never thought that the L series Canon glass that I was buying, I think I have six of them now, that they would be, you know, surpassed by a new mount to go to RF with the new Canon stuff.
Yeah.
And B, that they would be even sharper. You know, I just assumed that, you know, these were the best lenses available. If I bought them, they will, you know, stay the best lenses. And, and so as you go up in resolution, that's something you notice is sharpness and chromatic aberration and all those things. So yeah, it is similar though, where microphones are kind of like the lenses where you can hold on to them longer. They hold their value better.
Exactly.
That sort of thing.
Exactly. And then I think from there, you know, once you haven't made that investment, I think really what pays off the biggest for solo operators is technique, learning technique for making the best sound possible. Getting the mic positioning down, getting gain staging down, a big one is probably hiding lavalier microphones. If you're working on pieces where you do need to hide the lavalier microphone, that's an art. But then really kind of focusing on those skills pays the biggest in terms of dividends and quality and kind of the product that you can deliver to your customers if you are doing it for pay, or just the quality that you produce if you're doing it for fun.
Do you have tips for hiding a lavalier? Because I've tried it a bunch of different ways. I've used the Rycote like felt things that you can place on either side and then stick it to somebody. I've used the Rode lavalier Invisilav. That's what it's called.
Uh-huh.
I've used both of those, but if someone's wearing a noisy enough shirt, it's still a problem for me.
It is. Yeah. No.
Do you have any tips for that?
It is experiment. And that's the trick, is that with different, every person's different. I will say this, that with women, it is way easier to get a noise-free location. And basically what I do in 90% of the cases when I'm doing my corporate work, at least, I'm working with people who are not actors. And so they're not used to having someone dig around underneath their shirt. So I don't do that. For women, though, it's pretty straightforward, because what I can do is I can talk to someone and say, hey, okay, we're going to need to hide this lavalier on you. What I want you to do is take this into the changing room or restroom or whatever, and we want to clip the lavalier microphone on the little strap between the two cups on your bra so that it's sitting behind the bra. And that way it essentially puts it in a spot where the clothing is not going to rub against it. And in 90% of the cases, it works out pretty well. Now, that's the easy thing for women. So for men, it's a lot harder. And yeah. that doesn't always work for women, depending on what they're wearing, of course, but that works in a lot of cases for my corporate work. Now, with men, and depending on the corporate piece we're doing, sometimes we don't need to hide them, and so that solves that problem right there. I can just clip it to the outside of them, and that's pretty straightforward. But then for men, it's a little bit more work, but I found a lot of times, just because of the pace at which I'm working, I end up using the buttonhole on their shirt. And what that does is it makes it so that the lavalier microphone moves with their shirt. That at least eliminates the risk of the clothing rubbing against the microphone capsule, which is going to make the most noise. It doesn't eliminate the fact that, you know, if they do move, if they're wearing some, you know, polyester or something that makes a lot of noise, or, you know, even some of the cottons, especially if they're starched, they can be kind of crackly. Right. It doesn't eliminate that, but it does help. And so that's another lesson that I've learned over time, is that I'm almost always using a boom microphone plus a lavalier microphone.
And that's what I was just about to ask.
Yeah.
You usually double up and then
exactly
choose later.
Yeah, choose and post. Yeah. And sometimes I end up with the lavalier microphone because, you know, if I'm in a spot where there's a little bit more noise or something else going on next door in the office next door, or someone walks down the hallway is making a racket, or in the office where I work, we have these white noise generators, which are a nightmare, and they put them there because it's an open office plan, but it just wreaks havoc on your audio. And so sometimes I can talk with the facilities people and we can get them turned off, but sometimes I can't. And so, you know, there's just all these different factors that you're always fighting against. But yeah, having the two choices really, really helps.
I want to talk a little bit about, you know, what you would purchase if you had no audio gear and you had kind of different budget levels. So first, why don't we start with, you know, you're trying to get good quality audio, but you want to spend the least amount possible. And maybe you're filming either on your phone or like an entry-level camera. What would you recommend for someone in that situation?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is using one of the camera top shotgun microphones, but using it in a way that it wasn't necessarily designed. So there are a variety of manufacturers out there. There's DD microphones, there's Rode microphones. They each have a variety of different models. There's also some other lesser known brands. So TakStar, for example, TakStar, they make actually a couple that are surprisingly good for the price. So I'm in the process of reviewing one right now called the SGC-600, which comes in at $30 US, really cheap.
Yeah, you can't get much cheaper than that.
Not much. Mic,
unless you buy one used off somebody.
Exactly. And the way that I would say, you know, obviously if you're just running around following someone, you're going to put it on top of your camera, and that's fine. It's a little bit more directional than your camera microphones will be, and that'll be better than the camera microphones. But if you're doing a seated interview, for example, what you can do is get an extension cable for the microphone and just a regular old microphone stand, like the kind you see on a stage for a performance. They're about $25, and you can actually mount that microphone on that mic stand and run the extension cable back to your camera. And what that does, and the way it makes a huge difference, is it gets that microphone a lot closer to the person talking, and it makes a huge, huge difference. If if you're ever curious about the difference between that, I have a video that shows how to set it up on a mic stand like that. And it also, you know, we do a little demonstration where we have the microphone on top of the camera, you know, probably about 6 or 8 feet away, and then another one with a microphone boomed over me. And the difference is night and day. It's absolutely stunning, the difference. And this is just with a $30 microphone. You can make that difference. And so that would probably be my first recommendation.
And in that situation, are you actually booming from below? Because it's like more of a standard, like you said, mic stand that's, you know, for like someone that plays guitar on stage would kind of have. Or, you know, would you recommend a cheaper one that booms from above? Do you have a preference?
Well, actually, usually from above, the advantage of doing it from above typically is that you can boom the microphone down at the talent at about a 45 degree angle. And what that does is a few things. Is number one, of course, it gets it out of the frame. But what it also does is it aims the most sensitive part of the microphone down at the sound source, the person speaking. And then it also eliminates any sound that it might be behind them. So, for example, if you've got someone who is in a room and there's maybe an air conditioner at the back of the room or something like that, by aiming it down at a 45 degree angle, you're potentially cutting out some of that noise behind them. And in addition to that, a trick that you can do is if for example, you have hardwood floors or hard tile flooring, and you're getting a lot of reverberation in the room, that kind of echoey sound, what you can do too is you can throw a sound blanket or a moving blanket down on the floor right behind them, and that will help cut down some of that sound as well. So there are a lot of just little techniques you can use over time, you know, you kind of pick up over time, that will just improve the sound, the quality of the sound, without taking a whole ton of effort.
Yeah, and that's a good point of just understanding whatever microphone you do buy and positioning it and working on the environment is going to do so much more than spending more money on audio gear. And I try to instill that in people too, of like, great, you're excited, you want to have better audio, here's some microphones I recommend, but you should also think about the room that you're in. What can you do to the floors? What can you do to the walls if possible? Make sure you position the mic in the best spot. Turn off all the background stuff. You know, like there's a list of all these things that you can do. And like you said, using potentially a $30 microphone, $100 microphone, what have you, having that in the right spot in a room that sounds good is going to be much better than a very expensive microphone in a horrible room where you didn't put it in the right spot.
Exactly. And that's the cool thing from my point of view about audio is that, again, it really, there's so much more involved with technique. Although, I mean, that's true on the camera side. Once you've started shooting enough, you eventually realize there's technique here. There's a lot of technique here. And in fact, technique probably accounts for a lot of the improvements we would see in somebody over time as they shoot more and more. While our cameras do get better, I think the biggest improvements we see in the quality of a product that anyone produces, whether we're talking about camera or sound, it's really about technique and how you mature and learn techniques and skills and troubleshooting and things of that nature to kind of take care of those issues that arise.
If someone wanted to upgrade from that on-camera shotgun mic going directly into the camera, possibly with an extension cord, what would be the next thing that you recommend that they purchase?
Let's see. There could be a number of steps that you would take. So, for example, I think the next step up would be the higher quality camera top shotgun microphone. So now both Deity and Rode makes a VideoMic NTG, and Deity makes what they call their D3 Pro. The nice thing about these are kind of hybrids. They have better shock mounting on them. So if you are running around with it on top of your camera, it's going to isolate the sound or kind of the movement and the jostling from the microphone itself. So you get a little bit better results there. But it also, they're both kind of set up so that they're a little bit easier to adapt to a boom pull. So if you are doing a lot of seated interviews, or even if you do have a boom operator, someone you could have actually cueing the microphone between actors or interviewees or whatever the case may be, that those are kind of the next step up. And they do a little bit better, and they have a wider gain range, so they give you a little more flexibility. It's a little easier to get them set up and things of that nature when you're on, you know, in the middle of the heat of getting set up for a shoot. So those are kind of some of the advantages they provide. Do they sound amazingly better? Not really, but they're just easier to work with. And I think that's a theme as well, that when it comes to shooting professionally, and especially as a solo operator, that it isn't always about, you know, raw improvements in the quality that the camera or the audio recorder or the microphone produce. It's in helping that operator achieve reliable, high quality results. And that often is going to be ergonomic things. It's going to be capabilities, for example, the gain range on a recorder. So you could use more microphones without having a big noisy mess on your hands. There are just a lot of little things that aren't necessarily like the sexiest new features, but that just really help a professional as a tool produce a better quality product. And so that's an important thing. And I think that would be kind of the next step up, is a D3 Pro or a VideoMic NTG.
And so the D3 Pro is around $200 US right now, and the VideoMic NTG is $250. And what's also good about those is, you know, some of those can plug into mobile devices too, mm-hmm. or to your laptop, and you could use it as also a podcasting mic. I think the Rode NTG video mic is like a very versatile, like fits all kind of solutions microphone. I don't know. Does the D3 Pro also have the same feature to plug into a computer?
I don't think so.
If you wanted that feature,
that's a good point.
The Rode, but
yeah. That's a great point. And I think that that's another example of where you get a little more versatility. So you're spending obviously a lot more money. So a $250 microphone versus a $30 microphone. But that gives that device another purpose as well. So if you do have that purpose, if you're going to do live streaming at some point, and you need something to connect into a computer via USB, there's another option there. So it just makes it easier because now you don't have to go out and buy another microphone.
When should someone invest in an external recorder?
Oh, well,
is it less needed now? Like, are camera preamps just better, or the microphones are boosting with cleaner signals? Because I find myself not needing it as much as I used to because, like, camera preamps are better now.
Yeah, I think that you're definitely on the Canon side. And I think a lot of the Sony kind of entry-level cinema cameras, so the FS5 Mark II and the FS7s, those have pretty good preamps. And so at that point, you don't necessarily need a dedicated recorder, especially if you're a solo operator. I think the advantage of a dedicated recorder like a mixed pre are a couple of things. If you are, it can save your tail in a couple of different situations. So the nice thing about the mixed pre, for example, is it has the analog limiter. So if you do set your gain off just a touch, you're going to save yourself some time in post, and you're not going to have that clipping and that distortion that comes along with it. So
I also feel like it's very clean if you under record, like if you record too quietly, you can boost it and it's almost no difference. It makes me feel like I don't even need to set it properly. You know, I still try, but that's what I feel like with it. And it just is a nice sound coming through it. Like I've had to, with this SM7B I'm recording with right now, in the past, I've recorded into Focusrite Scarlett's, into like a 2i2 or, you know, an 18i8 or something like that. But those USB interfaces didn't have enough gain for this microphone. So I got a DBX 286S, which is kind of like a cloud lifter. It gives a ton of gain to the microphone. But right now, I'm just running this directly into a Mixpre 6, and it sounds great. There's no need for extra steps in the process. So I don't know. I really like those. I have the first version. There are some quirks with like the power cable, like the USB-C power cable with mine, but what you get out of them, I think it's well worth the money.
Exactly. And it's another example of where it's not like a super sexy feature, you know, analog limiters. Oh my gosh, I have to have them. It's not the kind of thing that people get really stoked about, but it's the kind of thing that as a working professional, it can save your tail and it can make sure that you produce a quality product for your clients, and it just makes your day easier. It's one less thing to worry about. And so I think that's a great example as well. And that's one piece of it. I think as well, obviously where a separate dedicated recorder becomes kind of a no-brainer choice is that when you do start to work on projects where you have a larger crew, where you do have someone that could be dedicated to sound, huge, huge difference there too. They need to have something that's not necessarily tethered to the camera in most cases. And so, you know, they could still send a wireless camera hop to camera, feed from the audio mixer to the camera. So you still have that. So it's all synced up and ready to go. And if they do a really good job and we don't have any dropouts on wireless, maybe the audio that you get on that wireless feed is going to be good enough for the production. But then you also have this backup and this, you know, this interface that a dedicated sound person can use to really kind of dial in your audio. So while you're focused on operating camera or gaffing or doing whatever you're doing, you've got someone else that's dedicated to the craft and the art of making that recording. So that's another case when it becomes an obvious choice.
And for me, I think the reason I like pulled the trigger to buy the Mixpre 6 was I had a shoot where I needed more than two inputs. Mm. So that was the thing. I was like, I need three mics going. And that usually is enough. You know, sometimes, you know, with the C200, you could finagle a third input and do a mic input or something like that. But, you know, it's like, I need three or four XLR inputs. I need a recorder.
Exactly.
So I'd had some lower end two input ones before, but, you know, getting to three or four inputs was the thing that made me actually make the purchase decision.
Yeah, totally makes sense. Yep. Not another obvious, you know, step forward if you're going to be doing. You're going to need to mic more people, then you're going to need a recorder for sure.
What are your three favorite microphones in these categories? Shotgun, boom mic for, you know, a talking head, one person. Mm-hmm. Lavalier microphone, and you could choose wired or wireless. And then, what was the last one I was going to choose? like a podcasting microphone.
Okay. Well, here's first, let me disclose. Well, let me just say one thing first as a disclaimer. The reality is that a really good production sound mixer, somebody who does sound on the set of a TV show or a film, they generally, from all of those that I've talked to, they generally have the philosophy that there's no one best microphone. It really depends on the voice of the person that you're miking. So there is that kind of, just keep that in the back of your mind. So what I say here would never be like the universal truth to the best microphones in these categories. But I would say this, the one that I'm using as far as a boom microphone, I kind of split it into two. So if I'm working outdoors, I use a shotgun microphone. And the one that I'm using currently is the DPA 4017B. It's about an $1,800 shotgun microphone. So it's not a cheap microphone, but it's a relatively short one. You know, for example, we're used to thinking of like the Rode NTG3. Traditionally, they've called those short shotgun microphones. And believe it or not, there were longer shotgun microphones that most of us don't work with, but they were a little bit more common in the past, especially if you're going to be working very far away from the person speaking. But this was significantly shorter than that and lighter weight. It has a beautiful sound, and it has interchangeable preamps, so you can switch to different preamps for various situations. Beautiful microphone. That would be my first choice for outdoor work. Now, indoor, typically, now you can get away with it. This is kind of an interesting area of controversy. You can use a shotgun microphone indoors, no question about it. And many of us do, especially as solo operators, we have to, you know, we're not going to go invest in 40 different microphones. And so you can, there is a risk indoors with a shotgun microphone because of its design. You know how it kind of has that long barrel with all the slits in it? That's called an interference tube. And the trick with an interference tube is if the main sound source makes its way, or whatever is loudest makes its way into the interference tube before it actually makes its way down the front of the microphone, you can get a kind of weird warbling sound to it. So if you're working indoors, and especially like in a really reverberant space where there's a lot of echo, the shotgun microphones can be a little bit problematic. So production sound mixers will often switch over to non-shotgun boom microphones when they're working indoors. And so the main one I'm using in that category is the Sennheiser MKH-8050. And it is a tiny, tiny microphone. It's about maybe 2 inches long. The nice thing about it, it's really small. It's unimposing, which is also good for interviews too. If you have something that's a little less imposing, it's not quite as intimidating for people, especially the people that aren't used to being on camera. So it has a beautiful sound, really nice, strong output level. Just really works well, and it's been my main microphone for indoor interviews and stuff like that, probably for the last 3 years now, I think. Been a good investment. Okay, so lavalier microphones. The dirty secret that very few people will tell you about lavalier microphones, although many people experience it for themselves firsthand and can't quite put their finger on it, is that they don't sound very natural, even if you do get them in a good position where they're not picking up a bunch of clothing noise. And that's because they're mounted on a person's body, and we don't usually listen to people by putting our ear up against their body. So they take a little bit more work, and they're a tool, a critical tool in doing production sound for film and video, but they're not generally my first choice. I usually use them, and I cut over to them when I have to, but they're, you know, usually I would prefer the sound of a boom if I can use a boom. But as far as lavalier microphones, I have actually several favorites. It's going to be hard to pick, but I think my current favorite that sounds really great on most people is actually a relatively new one from a company called Shure, whom you're familiar with because you're using one of their mics. But they released a new set of microphones last year called the Twinplex, and the Twinplex TL-48 is probably one of my favorites. It sounds great on most voices. Very, very durable. And you can get it terminated. That is to say, you get a connector on it for almost any of the professional level wireless systems or even some of the consumer wireless systems. So just been a really great microphone. It also has some, it is also somewhat sweat proof. So if you are going to be working with people that are, you know, either in, you know, whatever the case may be, and they're getting very sweaty.
fitness. Whatever kind of videos.
Yeah, exactly. Performers of some sort on stage. You're going to have a better chance of that not causing problems for you as well. So when a microphone gets wet, that can create a lot of problems. So that's a really good one there. There are, I could name about six others, but we'll do that another time. And then as far as live stream or, you know, podcast interview microphone or podcast microphones are concerned, the Shure SM7B is wildly popular, and I think it's a great microphone. It sounds great on most people's voices, and the huge advantage of that microphone over a lot of others is that it is, well, not over a lot of other dynamic microphones, but versus a condenser microphone, is that it does a really good job if you're recording in a space it isn't the greatest acoustically, say, for example, a spare bedroom or somewhere in your house it wasn't really designed for acoustic recording purposes. It does a really good job of preventing all that reverberation and other stuff from getting into the recording. So it's a really great mic from that standpoint. The downsides of that microphone, it's big. It is, so it's a little bit imposing if you are going to use it in a video type setting, although that doesn't bother me, but some people do have a strong opinion about that. And it also requires a ton of gain. So you are going to need a very capable preamplifier, like you had mentioned before. So your Mix Pre is going to be a much better fit for it than a Focusrite Scarlett or, you know, something else in the $200 range. So those are probably my first choices. Now, I'm actually using here today, if you'll indulge me, I'm using a condenser microphone here. I have a pretty decent room to record in terms of acoustics. And it's actually a condenser microphone from a company called Earthworks. It's the SR314. It's actually made as a handheld dynamic microphone for performance microphone for musicians. But I think it has a really fantastic sound to it. It works nicely with most people's voices, and I don't know. It's just a really personal thing. Every voice is a little different, and this one seems to fit my voice pretty decently.
Yeah, I would say that's one thing about microphones is if you can test them or rent them and, you know, try them in your environment to see what sounds different, I will, you know, like you'll hear the SM7B, you know, recommended by a lot of people, or for podcasting or live streaming earlier, it was like Heil PR40. Some people love that microphone. Mm-hmm. I used to own that. I felt like my voice sounded better on a Shure SM7B than it does on a PR40.
Yeah.
And that's just something you kind of learn, especially if you're using more of a broadcast, you know, podcast in your face microphone. They're all very different, and your voice to one is going to sound different. Similar to how they choose lenses that they're going to film actors and actresses on, because it'll make their face shape weird or not, you know? Uh-huh. So, you know, you kind of just have to test them, see what it's like, especially in your environment. You might think like, oh, I really want a shotgun mic, but it might sound better just to have a good lav mic where you're going to be filming most of your stuff. So it's about testing, I think.
It is. And that can be a scary thing to tell somebody, I mean, or for somebody to hear that's just trying to, you know, say I have $500 is my budget for sound. They don't want to hear that because it's like, oh my gosh, that's overwhelming. What am I going to choose? There are some, you know, the SM7B, for example, I think is a great choice. Does it sound perfect on everybody's voice? No. And in fact, I had bought the Electro Voice has a competing microphone called the Electro Voice RE20. And that sounds awful on my voice. Absolutely awful. The SM7B sounds better. The RE20 sounds fantastic on my wife's voice. So it's like, it's a tough thing. But there are some microphone rental companies out there. So if you look online, there are, you know, I'm not associated with any of them. But if you look online, you want to try some, that's a good way to try some before you invest that money. So you can at least get a sense for what it sounds like with your voice.
To wrap up, what are the most common mistakes you see people make with audio? You know, you're on YouTube for something other than cameras and audio and lighting. You're trying to fix your car or doing like a home project or something like that, and you pull up a video of someone like talking about how to fix a drain or something. What are the most common mistakes that people make that people should try to avoid?
Yeah, I think the most common is buying a camera top shotgun microphone and leaving it on the camera is the biggest one. Now, I realize that, for example, if it's a kind of a show like fixing a car where you're going to be walking around moving, that's where probably a lavalier microphone, wireless lavalier microphone makes a lot more sense, or a headset microphone, something like that. Same with a lot of fitness type things or yoga, you know, something that moves with you is critical. And so that's where a headset or a lavalier is going to be the best, and kind of dialing in how to hide it in your particular situation, whatever you're doing. So it can be tricky on, you know, like fitness things. If you're moving around a lot, that's where I'm a big advocate of headset microphones. Like, you know, you can either spend a lot of time and get it sorted out how you're going to hide that lavalier without making a lot of noise, or you can just go with a headset microphone. And it's, you know, it can be perfectly acceptable. People are used to seeing headset microphones on fitness instructors. And so that can be a fine approach. And I think a good direction to go. Just make your job easier, especially if you're doing it yourself. Another thing I think is that people have this assumption, again, it's because we've kind of been trained in this consumer electronics world, that microphones can be magical, you know, they should be magical. They should be smart enough to know what's noise and what's the thing that I do want to record. And the reality is they're not. And so, you know, people kind of, a question I get a lot, for example, what's the best microphone? I'm recording in a really noisy place. Well, that depends.
The best microphone is going somewhere else.
Yeah. I mean, that's one choice is, you know, maybe you go somewhere else. Another thing is maybe you need to invest in a couple hundred bucks worth of sound blankets and figure out how to, you know, suspend them temporarily off camera so that it kind of mellows out the room and reduces some of the reverberation and perhaps some of the outside noise. The problem is with sound blankets is they're really not there's nothing interesting or sexy about a sound blanket. It's like, it's not even really technology. I mean, we don't even think of it as a technology. It has no electronics in it. But the reality is if you want to make a difference, that's a much better investment than, you know, buying a $1,000 shotgun microphone versus a $200 shotgun microphone and some sound blankets. So I think that's the trap that a lot of us get caught in, is we think that the technology, the electronic technology, is going to solve the problem for us, when in reality, maybe some good old fashioned sound blankets would be a better investment for you and give you better results.
Yeah. And I think that carries over into the other areas of making videos as well. You know, like you can film in 4K or 6K or 8K or 12K or whatever, but if your lighting is horrible, or you're like, you don't have good makeup on a person, or your room is ugly, or, you know, like all the other things are just going to look worse. It's just going to amplify how crisp that all is.
What if, Caleb,
another aspect?
What if I buy a camera with really good dynamic range, then I don't need lights, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's another thing too, is like, if you have come up on the newer technology, you probably don't have some of the fundamentals that you needed from before. Like if you could film in 13 stops of dynamic range, you might be like, oh, I don't really need the light. Like I can see out the window. I can just pull up the shadows, and it kind of makes you lazy in some ways if you just have the ability to use everything. But I don't know. I try to be more of a maybe minimalist or just less consumerist, and I try not to buy gear and equipment anymore. I feel like I built up what I need, and I still have more than I need. And so I don't think that other people are the same way. I think they're always like looking for the newer thing. And so I think that hopefully for people who have listened through this conversation, like, audio is going to be an investment, but it's hopefully something that is going to last longer than other things. You know, your microphone, your audio recorder, whatever other audio stuff, your sound blanket, stuff like that. Like your sound blankets in 5 years are still going to be dampening the sound like the same way, you know. So they're more investments than other things. Like, you know, you might need a new computer every few years, or camera every 3 to 5 years or something like that. But audio equipment, I think, is worth investing in.
Agreed. And I think just to kind of share my final thoughts there is, I think that also kind of shows a level of maturity within your craft. It's hard when you're starting. You know, it's easy to get caught up in the, you know, the YouTube camera review race, especially in the last couple of weeks.
Well, yeah, I mean the Canon R5 and R6 and A7S3 and stuff like that. And
yes.
And you know, I'll probably get my hands on them and maybe make a video about them eventually, but it's like, yeah, it's seems like obviously the company's timed it accordingly. You know, I think when Canon said they were going to release theirs, like Sony announced theirs a little sooner, you know, like, so it's competition. It's good. Businesses didn't need to keep exist. They need to keep progressing with technology and stuff like that. But
And we're going to need new cameras, and that's fine. I think the level of maturity comes when you realize, okay, does what I have now serve the purpose I need? Is it going to help me create the, you know, the things that I need to create either for my clients or even just for myself? Can I do what I need to do with what I have today? Or you know, is it lighting that I need to invest in next to get that next level of quality that I'm looking for? So if there's anything, hopefully you guys that are listening to this can take away, it is that, you know, kind of look forward to building, if you're not already there, if you're not feeling it in your craft, that level of maturity where you can actually take a step back and instead of kind of obsessing, and we all do it. I still, you know, Canon C300 Mark III is horribly tempting to me right now. Is my Canon C200 enough? Yeah, it really is for what I'm doing. It's everything I need. Do I want that extra dynamic range? Do I want that high frame rate? All absolutely I do. Do I really need it? That's where it's going to be the test for me. Am I mature enough to say, you know what, I'll buy it when I need it, but right now I really don't need it.
Yeah. And I think that's a perfect way to close out this conversation. And where can people go to find more about you, your YouTube channel, your website, whatever social media you use?
Yep. Two places, learnlightandsound.com. And then over on YouTube, just do a search for Curtis Judd. You'll find all my videos there.
Perfect. Thanks so much for joining me today, Curtis. A lot of good advice for people, some gear recommendations, some of them out of my budget, even that the DPA 4017B. That's a pricey microphone, but
yeah,
you know, there's always something to work towards.
Absolutely. Caleb, thanks so much. Really,
thank you.
Privilege.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Curtis. I've learned a lot from him, like I said, over the years of tips and tricks with the audio equipment that I have, whether it's microphones, audio recorders, using cameras. He's very technical. He knows a lot of the things that all these things provide, all the different features. So definitely check out his YouTube channel if there is a specific piece of audio gear you're looking to invest in. I'm assuming he has a video on it. He's made videos about a lot of the gear that I use personally, and you could learn a thing or two along the way. We mentioned a lot of different equipment and microphones and links to some of the videos he mentioned, like putting a microphone on a mic stand, taking it off of a camera. Those links are all at the show notes for this episode. You can find them at calebw.com/97. So calebw.com/97. That'll take you to the show notes, and the links to all the gear and stuff we recommended will be there. Next week, we'll have an episode all about lighting. We'll be talking with Tommy Calloway, another YouTuber who specializes in reviewing lights right now. So we'll talk about lighting tips and things like that. And I can't wait to talk to you then. Cheers.